This is Brianna Cespedes, also known as DJ Cubanita, welcoming you to the Los Angeles Hispanic Republican Club show with your host, David Hernandez. Whether it's pupusas or tostadas, menudo or pozole, you have found one of the most recognized and respected voices representing the conservative Hispanic community in Los Angeles. So if you're an American of Hispanic descent and believe in family, faith, and opportunity, you just may be a Republican after all. Listen in and you decide. Are you one of us? Remember, brown is the new red, Republican red. So here he is, the man from Land of Lincoln, Lincoln Heights, David Hernandez.
Well, welcome, everybody. It's Saturday night, and yes, we know. Well, if you're listening on the radio or on the internet, we're coming across great. But if you're on Facebook, yeah, we know we have a little technical problem with the sound, so we're working on lowering that. But, you know, the show must go on, and so here we are. It's Saturday night. We're at the CNN Mental Studios in Glendale, California, and over to my left and your right is Mary Ann Burnell. Welcome, Mary Ann.
Good evening, everyone. I'm happy to be here once again. I'm looking forward to the show. We have an exciting guest to learn a lot of information. I'm kind of can't wait to hear what this gentleman has to say, so it should be interesting.
Well, and that is Stephen Hyder. Pretty, you pronounce your last name?
Sarinyana Lampson.
Sarinyana Lampson. And for those of you that had heard Stephen before when we were talking about the football stadium near Lincoln High, Stephen is also an author, and he has two books. That one is Memories of Place, and the other is Six Houses, and both of them deal with Lincoln Heights, and that's really an incredible book. So we'll go ahead and we'll put the links on our website and Facebook page where you can access those and see what it's about. But, you know, Stephen, it's what you're describing in your books, and it's really about gentrification, and, you know, a lot of people don't even know what that means. And is it good? Is it bad? I mean, how in your books, it's kind of like, you know, we're looking at a nostalgic view of Lincoln Heights that's kind of disappearing.
Very much so. And you know, gentrification in itself, I think, is a really widely misused term. A lot of folks, kind of a catch-all for a lot of folks, but let's kind of talk about that for a second, the difference between, say, gentrification and development. You know, gentrification is displacement by outside forces, typically mm-hmm. newcomers to a community that economically, you know, create an incentive for those to move away, or some kind of a social pressure to have people move away such that the community can be taken over by the newcomers.
Well, what about the generational? I mean, my family lived on Sitchell Street, you know, just between the railroad tracks and Broadway. That was in 1955 because they enrolled me at Griffin Elementary School, and you know, the community was, I mean, it was an older community then. Right. I mean, I remember as a kid, we had the Ragman. You know, a horse-drawn wooden wagon, you know, going down the street collecting or selling rags. You had the Byright Market. You had the, what was the cleaners over there on North Broadway, and also by the mortuary that was there, and the State Farm. It was the Fierros that had the State Farm little office there.
Right.
So
right.
That's when I think of Lincoln Heights. That's kind of what I think about, but that's not so much today.
I mean, you look at Lincoln Heights historically. I mean, first of all, it was the original East Los Angeles, right? It mm-hmm. was about the 1870s. It became a refuge for folks that didn't want to live in the city proper. So you mm-hmm. had some of the more prominent families actually built houses in Lincoln Heights. So mm-hmm. at the turn of the century, Lincoln Heights was considered a very upscale community. It wasn't until the 20s when it was actually changed names to Lincoln Heights. Mm-hmm. And there's a whole story behind that. But the community has quite an impressive legacy within the history of Los Angeles, mm-hmm. an architectural legacy, a cultural legacy, a political legacy. And so a lot of folks kind of discount Lincoln Heights of today as just a kind of a, you know, Mexican-American barrio. But in the truth of it all, it really functioned as its own little city at a point in time. It was a small city in you know, in Los Angeles. It was called the East Side. It had its own newspaper, had its own economic base, markets, and different functions of businesses and what have you. So, you know, today's Lincoln Heights it's much different in terms of what it represents and who lives there, in terms of its economic base. It's changed tremendously. Mm-hmm. And I think that's one of the problems we have in terms of this notion of gentrification. It's ripe for folks from the outside to jump in and, you know, purchase properties below market rate, to come in and develop multi-unit condominium projects, which effectively, the truth of the matter is, are not for folks from the community, but for outsiders to come in and again, now live downtown adjacent. I mean, the Lincoln Heights of old, you know, we live next to the LA River. Mm-hmm. Now we're downtown adjacent, which is a very profitable, you know, opportunity for people. And long-term residents just, you know, it's not a multi-generational community like it once was. Mm-hmm. You know, in my day when I was a kid, my mother had gone to Lincoln High School. Well, a lot of the moms of my friends.
Yeah, my father went there, graduated from
right.
there.
Right. And so now, because of the transitory nature of the community, you know, you have folks that they're there for a couple of years and they're gone.
Mm-hmm.
Home ownership in Lincoln Heights is below 30%.
Wow.
So what incentive is there for folks to, you know, kind of take ownership of the community when they're renting at a rate that's probably way above what their means are, quite frankly? And so it's a community in transition. I've been told by many folks in the real estate community that it's like the last bastion of gentrification. It's the last, you know, kind of prime location to jump in if you're a developer or a flipper, and kind of take over, quite frankly. So it is going through a lot of changes right now.
And Marianne, I think what Stephen just talked about, take over or flip over them, as a realtor yourself, I mean, I think, aren't you finding that buying a home, I mean, there's so much competition from either corporations or that it's almost.
Oh, yes. You know, I hear over and over that you have corporations like BlackRock and Vanguard kind of buying up a lot of these properties. I think even my sister works for one of these kind of organizations that kind of buy up these properties, and they buy them and they just rent them. And so, like you're saying, the 30% of people, I mean, that's shocking, really, to think that it's only 30% of people that are actually being able to purchase homes. I talk about my son all the time, how he tried, this was about 3 years ago when the market was crazy hot, and he went from one city to the other city, then even went to Canyon Country, and he just kept getting outbid. At first he was looking for houses, and then he was like, okay, go to condos, and people were just buying houses cash left and right. And how do you compete with cash buyers? It's difficult. So there's something very strange going on. It's kind of like, do we have these big corporations just kind of taking over our country right now? You hear China buying up land left and right. I was just looking at an article about Texas. There was some land being bought up, and they were supposedly building these big windmills that were really in an area where they really didn't get very much wind. So, I mean, there's a lot of strange things happening, and you know, it's really sad in a way, because you're looking at people who have been here for generations, families that are kind of being displaced. They're being forced to move to other states. I know a lot of family members in my own family who've moved to Texas, Arizona, and they're not leaving because they want to leave. Mm-hmm. They're being forced to move.
Well, and I think, and that's what happens, Stephen, is you're, okay, a lot of these older houses, I mean, somebody comes up, like you said, someone knocks on your door and says, you know, I'll offer you $1 million for this house. That's probably, worth $400,000? And it's like, how do you say no to that? And what are the consequences?
I think the interesting thing about that is that, at least what I have seen in the neighborhood, is it's not about the house. It's about the land.
Yeah.
You know, we're an R4 community, so therefore multiple units can be built on the different lots that we have.
Mm-hmm.
And that was kind of the basis of the book Memory of Place, where I kind of took a look at the last breaths of a four-square Victorian mansion that sat on a substantial piece of land that had been there for over 120, 130 years. And it wasn't about the house. Somebody from outside decided to come in, purchase it with the intention of knocking it down. And the story behind the attempts, it's crazy. Unfortunately, the house is now down. It is just a large parcel of land, and the gentleman is hoping to build 42 luxury condominiums mm-hmm. in the community. Condominiums, quite frankly, that probably nobody from the community would be able to afford.
Right.
So, again, you have this notion of displacement. You have this notion of gentrification, pushing people out for economic reasons in this case.
Well, for the longest time, wasn't there like a height limit that really prevented some of these big apartment buildings coming in?
Very much so. For the longest time, there was a height limit of 45 feet in the Lincoln Heights community, which mm-hmm. has since gone by the wayside. You have multiple units, 3-4-story units now throughout the neighborhood, which do not fit into the character of the Lincoln Heights community, which mm-hmm. was at one time a bedroom community. It was actually, a two-story building was kind of odd. It would stick out, right? And now that's not the case. I mean, again, the architectural fabric of the neighborhood is changing as we speak. And it's something that I think a lot of long-term residents like myself, I mean, my family's been in Lincoln Heights since 1910. So we do have kind of a sense of the place, a sense of its spirit. And I think to a great extent, a sense of, you know, what the architecture of the community represented.
Well, you know, and in your book, you talk about some of the different types of architecture. I mean, like we lived in a little duplex, so that was we had the front porch, and that connected my grandmother lived on one side, and then my parents lived on the other, and we had a nice big backyard. But the house next to us, where the Henry and M.P. Cabral lived, that was one of the nice Victorian houses. And then we had the Mendozas live down the street, and Gonzalez's up there, and that's kind of how we grew up. And you look at it now, and I guess over by Avenue 19, I avoid the 5 freeway at all costs. So I go down Riverside. I go down like the old route. I come down Riverside Drive, past Las Feliz through Frogtown. And just go on up to either Main Street or just on my way, wherever I'm going. Even if I'm going to Huntington Park, I just take the side streets. So I see all of this this construction that has gone on. Now, a lot of it in residential, but a lot of it in commercial over by the 6th Street Bridge. I mean, they're building all of those condos there. And it's like it looks kind of nice because it used to be like old warehouses and stuff. But how do people afford to live in there?
It's a good question. And, you know, to your point about the architectural diversity of Lincoln Heights, I mean, don't forget that it is the oldest community in Los Angeles outside of the city proper. So you have examples of everything from like turn of the century Victorian to craftsman bungalows to, you know, kind of a postmodern couple of pieces that have been put up here and there. So it really has a very diverse inventory of residential architecture. Mm-hmm. On the main drags on both Broadway and Main Street, we have turn-of-the-century buildings that have been there for over 100 years that are still functional as commercial spaces.
Well, you know, and one of our listeners, they just my friend Tony Washington, he said his, his grandfather was born on North Avenue 29 in 1893. So that is, that backs up what you're saying. It was such an old neighborhood. Yeah. Now, even though I was from Lincoln, I didn't know that. You know, and I had as a kid, we'd go to Lincoln Park and go fishing, or the paddle boats or that. But I didn't realize that it was after Abraham Lincoln, and they still have that big bust statue of Abraham Lincoln there at the park.
Well, actually, let me tell you how that happened. You know, when it was decided that the Chamber of Commerce in the community wanted to change the name of the community, it was Dr. Ethel Percy Andrus, the mm-hmm. principal of Lincoln High School, that suggested the name Lincoln Heights. So the community has taken the name from the high school.
Uh-huh.
So once that was voted on, it was actually voted in a classroom, in a night meeting at the Lincoln High School campus when it was still in the old location. The community then began this transition. Lincoln Park, Lincoln Park Avenue, these things kind of happen as a result of it being named after the high school, which is kind of an interesting thing, you know. So, I think that when you grew up in Lincoln Heights, at least for me, and I talk about this a little bit in the book, I mean, when you grew up in Lincoln Heights, you know, we didn't realize we had these architectural gems around us. We just mm-hmm. all lived in old houses, right?
Yeah. I mean,
we lived in an old neighborhood, we lived in old houses, no big deal. And I think now, you know, obviously, as I've gotten older and begin to appreciate, again, this architectural character that we have in the neighborhood, you know, and to see, you know, to see properties that get fenced in and they sit there for a year or two, then they get knocked mm-hmm. down, and then, you know, a square box apartment gets built there with four units.
Oh, yeah, I just saw that on Avenue 19.
Yeah, exactly.
It was chain link fence around, and all of a sudden, wait a minute, you've got some of these. It looked like some of the older houses that they kind of fixed up, but then all of a sudden you've got this, you know, rectangle box there.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
And well, I think also what's interesting, I'm noticing people aren't really flipping anymore, because you would have, you know, the community, people that lived in the community buy up these properties mm-hmm. and say, you know what, I'm going to renovate this old house and, you know, kind of, you know, make it new again, and somebody else in the proper in the community would buy it, and that's not really happening. And it's like, what happened to the flippers? They're no longer around. It's like now you just have these big investors just coming up, buying up the land, and just, you know, making a gigantic apartment building or condos. So I think that's kind of different too. That's a new thing, because we're not seeing flippers anymore.
Mm-hmm. And you know, Marianne, you hit it on the right on the nail. I mean, it's about the land. Right, mm-hmm. It's not about the houses. It's not about the structure that's on the land. It's about the land, and the ability for someone to, in many cases, pay cash money to buy a property, raise it, and then put in some kind of a multi-unit dwelling. Right,
yes.
Whether it's condos, whether it's an apartment or a duplex, fourplex, whatever the case may be. So, it's funny how, you know, for us, we grew up at a time when it was kind of considered, you know, just a kind of a working class neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
Now we're a highly desired neighborhood because we're downtown adjacent, right?
Yes.
It used to be we live next to the river, but now we're downtown adjacent, which is the key word that a lot of realtors are using when you look at some of the houses that are being sold in the community. So it's kind of like the second conquest of the West, right? I mean, mm-hmm. you got people from the outside that are coming in.
We're losing the small town feel. And it's happening everywhere. It's not just Lincoln Heights. It's happening everywhere. We're that small town feel of the families just buying a property and being able to have some, you know, something to hand down to your children. It's kind of starting to not happen anymore. People are losing their homes, really, because everything continues to go up. They can't afford anything anymore. And, you know, unfortunately, I feel like our children are not going to be left with much. Mm-hmm. You know, they're going to be forced into apartment, you know, a permanent rental. That's kind of what's happening. And I think it was something at the World Economic – somebody there at the World Economic Forum said something like, you will own nothing and be happy, right?
Yeah. We'll give you free internet and Instagram and TikTok, although TikTok looks like it's on its way out. But, you know, Stephen, when you were talking about, you know, all of this building, it really impacts traffic, and it really impacts parking. And when you look at, you know, some of those older neighborhoods like that, you know, there's very little, you know, the parking is very limited anyway. So then when you build, you know, one of these multi-unit things where, you know, North Broadway is a transit corridor, so you don't have to have adequate parking for your guests if you're going to build a 40-unit apartment.
Well, that's a great point, because, you know, there's a concept in architecture called carrying capacity, and I'll explain that in a second. But if you look at Lincoln Heights, from North Broadway to Main Street, from Lincoln Park Avenue to Daly, that's about a square mile.
Mm-hmm.
We have 35,000 residents in that square mile today, okay? So as you continue to densify the community, you know, you think about the carrying capacity talks about what that location can sustain. It would be as if you had a 100-seat airplane and you put 150 people on it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, how does that work, right? Mm-hmm. And so now, you know, we have systems that have been in place for 100, 110, 20 years that are being taxed because of the amount of people that are now, again, densifying the community. Parking is atrocious, right? There's a lot of variances that are happening now where it used to be you had to have two parking spaces off the street for a single-family dwelling. That's being changed because of laws that, you know, from a state level, right?
Yeah.
With the whole ADU issue. So you're right. I mean, the community now doesn't have the same feel, the same vibe, you know, and we're not just with residential, commercial. I mean, I remember family-owned businesses and restaurants that used to be on Main Street and on Broadway.
Mm-hmm.
They're no longer available.
Well,
they're
like
gone.
We said, the Buy Right Market.
Exactly.
I mean, how long has that been, you know, vacant?
Yeah,
I mean, it's my parents shopped there.
Right. Right, exactly. You know,
and then did you say Bank of America as well?
The old Bank of America has been sitting fallow for probably 10, 11 years, and mm-hmm. only recently is it now being made into a transitional housing unit, which, again, for residents, ask themselves, who are these people that are going to be transitory in our community?
Right.
I mean, that in itself is a whole different question. And so, you know, a lot of changes are happening, and quite frankly, not everyone's happy about them.
No. Well, and, you know, and we've only got about 7 minutes left, so we want to revisit the issue when you were first here, and that's the field over at the Kenny Washington Stadium.
Right.
And so since then, you've been to the for the listeners that aren't familiar, would you just give a quick recap?
Sure. The Kenny Washington Stadium Foundation, of which I'm president, we've been looking to try to get an artificial surface at Lincoln High School for the last 14 years. Mm-hmm. And when the modernization of Lincoln High School was announced in 2018, we thought that was a wonderful opportunity to have that addressed. At that time, the funding for the modernization was $163 million. It has since ballooned to $277. We went out, and what the district said to us is, you want a field, go get your own money. Mm-hmm. So we worked with Councilmember Gilbert Cedillo. We came up with the concept of having this kind of a mixed-use location where the field would be Lincoln High School's from Monday through Friday, and it would be Parks and Rec Saturday and Sunday. So it's a win-win.
Win-win, yeah.
Total win-win. We found out that field would cost about $2 million. We went out to a company that was pretty much the number one company in the country. They flew out. They took a look at the site. They told us it was $1.8 million. Great. The council member provided $2 million. The school district matched it for an additional $2 million, and we thought, this is great. We're going to be able to get the field and a bunch of different amenities, and then everything went sideways, right? The first thing that came out of the district's mouth was, well, that's a $6 million project. And we thought, in what world is that a $6 million project? We just got an estimate from the number one company in the country who said it was 1.8.
Yeah.
That $6 million project, I have been told, is now between $10 and $15 million.
Oh, my goodness.
I have been told it's now a 2 to 3 year lead time. And so since the last time I was here, we had an opportunity to address the LA Unified School District board members. We have a letter in to Superintendent Carvalho. We're hoping to have a chance to sit and talk to him, because I think that the narrative that he's receiving from internal forces at the district mm-hmm. is kind of one-sided. I think there's a lot of inequities there in terms of the information he's being given. Oh, by the way, the $2 million that the district matched, you know, all of a sudden it's no longer available. No one knows where it is. No one knows, you know, what happened to it. The $2 million that we got from the council member was rolled into the $277 million, and it's been specified as a grass field. They're going to buy goalposts and a scoreboard and a speaker system and water fountains with fill stations with our money that we went mm-hmm. out and got. The money they told us we had to get for this project.
Right.
So that's where it stands, and we're hoping to meet with Superintendent Carvalho as soon as we can to just, again, not to confront him, but I think that there's another part of this narrative that he's not getting, and that's from a community perspective.
Right. Well, and, you know, and that's the same turf company that would then they do Notre Dame and others. So it's a quality field
right.
with a track record.
Right.
But the developer construction company that the LAUSD wants to use is not going to be them, right?
No, and it's interesting because, as you mentioned, that company has put installations in at Notre Dame, Michigan, Syracuse. I mean, every major college on the East Coast and some colleges on the West Coast.
Yeah, but you know, the reality is if you're on the board of LAUSD and you're dealing mainly with a lot of staffers and consultants, why would you spend $1.8 million on an artificial field when you can spend $20 million with a politically connected developer or contractor that's going to end up supporting you when you want to run for re-election?
Well, I think this goes to the notion of facilities specifically not having a sense of what the value of money is.
Yeah.
I mean, to them, it's like monopoly money.
Well, the facilities money is what, like $8.2
billion? $8.5 billion. And they're going to try to get another bond on the ballot in November. And again, you know, in the grand scheme of things, at $277 million, the project at Lincoln High School, the contingency budget's over close to $30 million, right? So what's $2 million out of that $30 million? We raised the money. They took the money and they absorbed it into the project, mm-hmm. right? Unbeknownst to us, by the way. The $2 million that they matched, no one knows where that is. No one will answer where that is, right? So we continue as a community organization to try to pressure the district in terms of answering the questions that we need answered. You know, we fulfilled our end of the social contract. We went to our school board member and said, listen, you are our elected representative. We'd like you to represent us. And for probably 4 or 5 hours, she did. And then she made a call to facilities, and that was kind of the end of our relationship with her.
Sorry, the contractors, we have a change of heart and a change of contract. So, Stephen, you know, thank you for all the work that you do. Yes. You know, you all have an open invitation to come back anytime.
Thank you.
You know, this particular show has a connection with Lincoln Heights.
Absolutely.
And we think more people, because what is happening there is happening all over. Yeah. We know that. Tony said over in Sawtelle, just be in West Los Angeles, you know, the homes are being replaced with a 15-story apartment building. And so it's happening everywhere. So this is an issue that is going to continue, and we're going to continue getting the message out. So,
yes.
And don't forget, folks, we'll be posting Stephen's books on our website. And so Marianne, there's the first half hour.
Yes, there is a lot of information. It's very interesting to see what's happening in our cities.
Yep.
A lot of it is not good. You know, it's not grassroots. It's not coming from the people. It's coming from the politicians.
Yep. Well, speaking of that, we'll be right back with Amy Bond from PERC, because there's a lot of that going on with our kids. So this is David Hernandez and Marianne Burnell and Stephen Sarana Lempson. We'll be right back. And we're back, Marianne. That was quite an interesting half hour.
It was. I learned a lot. There's a lot to know. I mean, there's some good things about regentrification. It's not all bad, but it's not all good either. So
yeah, I guess it depends on how you do it. I think I think everything depends on how you do it. What are the intended consequences, but more than that, what are the unintended consequences?
Exactly. And I think it helps when it's grassroots. I think it helps when it's coming from the community rather than big corporations coming in and buying up everything.
Well, but, you know, and that's why it's important to have organizations that are willing to step up and, you know, not only just go to the city council meeting, but also with legislation, with lawsuits and things like that. And so we are very fortunate indeed to have our next guest, and that is Amy Bond. Welcome. Hi, Amy.
Hi, David.
Hi, Amy.
Nice to be here, you guys. Nice to see you again.
Well,
yes.
You know, I mean, for those of our listeners that don't know you, I know your organization is called PERC, and that's what, Protecting Educational Rights of Kids?
Protection of the Educational Rights of Kids, yes.
Right. Yes. And when was that started?
We started PERC in 2019 around SB 276, which is a law that California legislators introduced.
The evil twin of SB 277.
Right, which essentially it took away all of the medical exemptions that children had, and they had, you know, had been harmed by vaccines. And so these legislators were super extreme and actually trying to remove those medical exemptions that those children had. So that was the second bill after SB 277, which took away all the religious rights of families. So, yeah, so we started PERC in 2019 right around that battle and that fight. And we became officially a nonprofit in 2020, just in time for lockdown.
Mm-hmm.
We
yes.
started our nonprofit in February, so of 2020.
Well, I know we've had Jessica Cabrera from Sun Valley on here on the show as well, and she's really active and is a great. And what's really good is a lot of your information is in Spanish as well.
Yes, Jessica is one of the co-founders of PERC, so she was there from the very beginning. And I actually moved here from Texas to California, by the way, in 2018. So.
Oh. Right before the COVID.
Right before 277 right before 276 and then right before COVID happened. So my husband's originally from California, and it was a really, really shocking thing, honestly, to come to California in 2018, because the childhood that he knew, he was raised in the San Francisco Bay Area, and it was just night and day from what he grew up in, just this great community, family friendly. And so, you know, 20 years later, really the state has been overtaken by such extreme policies that are really ruining our state, whether it's parental rights, children, schools, you know, you pick the issue. And I cannot see anything that's working well.
Yes.
That their policy, as they've been pushing for these very extreme policies, including that's why part of why we started PERC.
Well, you know, when I was growing up, I was vaccinated. I mean, this whole vaccine thing, when 277 started coming out, And all of a sudden there was rallies and protests. And it's like, well, wait a minute. I was vaccinated. I mean, I think I probably got like 7 or 8 vaccines. And I said, what are these people complaining about? What are they, you want to bring back the mumps and the measles and, you know, polio and all this stuff? And it was, I went down to a press conference at the Mexican consulate. And it was because there had been like a group mass vaccination in Mexico. And 6 kids died from those vaccines.
Wow.
And so they were there. And so I just went there to try and find out. Mm-hmm. And I'm meeting, you know, ex-pharmacy reps. I'm meeting with doctors. I'm meeting with parents. Most of the parents were well-educated, progressive liberals that were like standing up for, you know, safe vaccines. They weren't anti-vax. Mm-hmm. But they wanted safe vaccines, and so it was very enlightening because I didn't know anything about it, and I think that's what happens to most people, is that you have an admirer on the other side of.
You know what? Most of your listeners probably know this person. It's Dr. Jeff Barkey.
Dr. Barkey.
We know Dr. Barkey. Hi, yeah. Hello. What are you doing here?
Nice to see you. I don't
nice
know.
Nice to see you, too. We're talking
Barkey, good to see you.
We're talking about vaccines and PERC and upcoming events. Oh, come on. Jump in.
You're doubling up tonight.
You have a new book?
Yeah, I do.
No.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. You are right on time. David, how did you know that we were going to have this great conversation and include Dr. Barkey? I love this.
I'll set up the you take care. Just a little bit. You take care.
That is so
fun. That's good.
Fun.
Yeah. Perfect. Yeah, and so
we're talking about vaccines,
yeah,
by the way,
of
and
course.
How most of us really, most people don't realize that the stigma that they've attached to the conversation.
Oh, sure.
That's
I got attacked just for asking questions,
right?
Because I was telling about the press conference that I went to at the Mexican consulate, mm-hmm. right? You know, when 277 was going on, and all I did was ask questions, and I was like, well, wait a minute, what are you? You want to bring back polio? You want to do all this stuff?
No, you know what? That's a false narrative.
Yeah,
it's damn time that more parents start asking questions.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
The vaccine industry is corrupt. We're harming our children, and it's got to stop. If parents know nothing else, then all vaccine companies are immune from liability. That should raise a red flag in their mind.
Well, and that's
of the vaccines have gone through a double placebo.
No, they haven't.
Trial study
no.
to prove that they're actually safe or effective.
That's right.
And some of the, you know, the frequent vaccines people give their children outside of COVID. The COVID's kind of the mm-hmm. big new one. I mean, there's only been a few days, literally, that they have been studied after they were, you know, brought to market.
100%. It's really unbelievable. There's a reason why, you know, something like 60% of our population has at least one chronic illness. 40% of the U.S. population has 2 chronic illnesses. 30% of our children are morbidly obese. Autism is skyrocketing. There's a reason for this. And it's not just all vaccines, but in part it is vaccines.
Right. It's one of the components.
And I'm tired of being called an anti-vaxxer.
Well, Kennedy.
That's right. Yeah. I am pro-informed consent.
There you go.
And not enough mm-hmm. of that happens. You know, every week on my Instagram site, RX for Liberty, every Friday I do some sort of informed consent. I read the package insert for another vaccine or another drug, mm-hmm. and I just want to inform parents as to what's going on and let them make their own decision. But these vaccines, the numbers that we're giving our kids, they're harming our children. I've got a new book coming out probably in May. It's called Unavoidably Unsafe, Childhood Vaccine Schedule Revisited, co-authored by Ed Gere, who's a brilliant technical writer. He's a retired ER doctor. And we got Skyhorse and ICANN to publish it for us.
Congratulations,
yeah,
Dr.
Thank
Barkey.
You. Maybe I'm probably not supposed to say this, but whatever.
I would add one of the other issues about surrounding vaccines that parents are not really aware of, along with manufacturers and in the vaccine industry don't have any immunity. They're free from immunity, right?
Yeah, you can't
sue them.
Right, right. But in addition to that, those, you know, Pfizer, Johnson & Johnson, any of these major companies, they have been convicted in the courts of law for fraud and for fraudulently bringing forward products knowing that they would cause harm to children and families and did not disclose that information. I mean, one of the most famous examples is Vioxx. Where they brought this product to market and, you know, tens of thousands of people died. And these are the very manufacturers that are bringing forward these products. They don't have immunity.
They don't care.
You can't sue them.
It's all about money.
And it's about money, but they're convicted in the courts of law.
What's sad is that most of this information does not get to the normal, average, everyday person. That's why I think I always ask, are you on social media? Do you post this stuff on your social media? Because that's the way most people are getting their information.
No, you're right.
And the other thing is what do you say to parents? Because parents trust the government. And
their doctor.
And they're told by their schools they have to have their immunization shots. And they feel like they have to do it in order to put their kids into a public school. So what would you say to the parents that, you know, that's what their thought is?
Well, listen, if I had young kids, I don't right now, but if I did, they would not be in any public schools. They would be homeschooled or they'd be in a charter school that shared my values. And if I couldn't do either, I'd move out of California.
Definitely not Granada Hills Charter.
Yeah, actually, we have a lawsuit against Granada Hills Charter School.
Yeah, I know. That's why I said that.
For the first teachers that were.
But I agree with what you're saying because we're hearing that a lot right now. And I hear a lot of people are taking their kids out of school.
And unfortunately, homeschooling currently is the only loophole that allows you not to be vaccinated. I wouldn't put a drop of that poison in my little kids if I had little kids right now.
Okay. Yeah, and I would add another thing to what you were saying about, you know, the information, how parents are not really able to access the information. In addition to that, there's such a push of propaganda, meaning that the information that they can access is not accurate and does not tell the whole story about vaccines, period. So they're getting bombarded with, you know, information's being censored, suppressed, and what information they do have is really, really propagandized. Is that the word, propaganda?
I think it is, and you're right. I mean, under no circumstances should the government compel any citizen to participate in a medical procedure like a vaccine. It's wrong. It should never happen. I know there's a lawsuit going on right now. I don't know if PERC is part of it.
We have a number of them.
You know,
suing California to try to overturn the ban on religious exemptions for vaccines.
Oh, yes. Yeah, we are actually working with ICANN in collaboration with them.
Yeah.
So they're taking the lead on that, and we're there to support. But yeah, that's exactly to the point you were making about children and parents and schools. It was unlawful for them to even take away the religious, you know, beliefs and rights anyways. And I kind of feel like in some ways we capitulate to, like, we give in. Well,
I was surprised when 277 came out that there wasn't a pushback from the faith-based community.
Right.
It was like they just, shut your doors. Oh, okay, just abundance of caution.
Right.
Close your churches and synagogues.
Yeah,
and they just, it's like, how could that happen so easily? But with 277, boy, I think that gave them a green light. It's like, wow, look at this.
Right.
The churches are quiet.
Right.
Not every church.
Rob McCoy's church.
I go to Rob McCoy's church. I love Pastor Rob.
Yeah.
He's the best.
And Jack Hibbs's church.
He's an amazing
guy. And we had also, you know, some of the synagogues with Michael Barclay and a couple of others that stayed open. It's like, you know what? So there were people pushing back. It was a small group.
And you're talking about during COVID when. Yeah. There was just this tremendous pressure on the church, you know, to try to tell them to shut the doors, don't sing, stop your Bible studies while Costco is open and liquor stores are open.
The pot dispensaries are essential.
Yes. Exactly.
Because actually today is 420. So.
Oh, I forgot. That's right.
Yeah,
today,
it is?
Today is 420. Today is 420.
Why would you know that, David?
Well, because, Dr. Markey is a doctor, so
actually 420 is not working out quite well here in California, I was just surprised how quickly, I guess, people were afraid. I mean, and that whole fear that it was instilled that you could really get the masses to mm-hmm. comply.
It was fear, and also when it comes to the children, which makes me so sad on their behalf, is how they were given the burden of grandma and grandpa. You know, they were told, which created more fear as well, that if they didn't put on a mask, or if they or their, you know, their mom and dad didn't get vaccinated, they were going to literally kill grandma and grandpa or their neighbors. So children, the younger generation for the first time was burdened to protect and save the older generation. Right. I mean, how incredibly backwards was that? And then they were, you know, not able to go to school, and the academic loss we are still seeing today.
100%.
The harm that has happened to the children of this generation because we allowed the schools to be closed.
Well, too, I think the schools are just so corrupt right now. Mm-hmm. They're just so bad. And I agree with what the doctor said. If you can find a way to not have your kids in school, take them out. I do have grandchildren. I have a 16, a 13, and a 7-year-old. Mm-hmm. And my granddaughter, I think it was, I want to say it was the beginning of the year when I would go pick her up from school, and she would come out with her face mask on, and all the other students were. And I told her, you do not have to wear that. Please don't ever let me see you wear that mask again, because once one person starts not wearing the mask, and the other one will feel free. It's just that when they all do it, they all feel like they have to do it. But when it just takes one or two people to stop doing it, then the next one will stop, and the next. I'm like, be a leader. Mm-hmm. So be the leader and show by example by not wearing your mask, because it doesn't do anything to protect you. In fact, it's going to harm you.
Yeah,
and so, but it's just, you know, that's what's happening in the schools right now. Mm-hmm. The teachers are trying to, I don't know if you want to say brainwash our children with a lot of just nonsense.
They are trying to brainwash. I think that the woke movement, our children, instead of learning math and science and history,
they're learning their pronouns.
They're learning how to be, you know, they're bombarded.
They're being sexualized. Yeah.
Right. Sexualizing kids at 5 years old and trying to push this entire woke ideology on them. And I've been deeply concerned about this for years. And, you know, I mean, you see it just increasing with, you know, with our kids. And I think it is so damaging and dangerous. And really, if we could just call it what it is child abuse for, you know, for parents or these authority figures to tell children they're born in the wrong body, that they're really – what they're affirming is that something is wrong with that child, right? And they're telling them something that is just not true instead of lovingly, you know, encouraging them that, hey, we all go through these phases of, you know, 10, 11, 12 where we're awkward and we're self-conscious and we're trying to figure out who we are. But instead, this entire woke culture is telling them – it's telling them a lie. Yeah. And that's the thing
that's scary.
Well,
and you have the politicians that are doing that. So politics is – you know, that's why – I think politics is really important. And I think it's really important for good people to get involved in politics.
Yes.
And, you know, and especially when people become a little bit more enlightened about, you know, maybe they get to reconsider their past positions and with their party affiliation. So you have an event coming up next week, next Saturday?
Yes.
And what is that about?
I am so excited about this because it's Tulsi Gabbard. We've brought Tulsi Gabbard to California. Mm-hmm. She is going to be speaking at a PERC event. She's our keynote speaker. It will be held on April 27th. So
27th.
It's just a week from now. And really, we're about 2 days away from closing out the tickets. Mm-hmm. So now's the kind of last call for that, just the next 2 days. But the exciting thing about it is it's a pre-release event for her new book. So everybody that attends will get a copy of her new book, which is called For Love of Country, you know, Why She Left the Democrat Party.
For people that don't know that name, she was a congresswoman in Hawaii.
Four-term congresswoman. Mm-hmm. She's active in the military. I mean, she is phenomenal as a leader, as a woman. She's very articulate and outspoken about the issues happening with children, war, the military-industrial complex, you know, mandates, free speech, you name it. She is just a powerful woman out there. And we have her here in California. It's just such a blessing. And that when you talked about political parties, the thing that I like about Tulsi Gabbard is she wasn't afraid to change or leave the party that she had been in for decades, which was the Democratic Party, and follow her heart and principles because it no longer aligned with her beliefs and with her values. And so she called them out as a party and also, moved into the space of being an independent right now. Mm-hmm. So I just think it's, She's incredible. I cannot wait for her to be here on Saturday.
Should be a great event.
Yeah. How do people get tickets while they're still available?
Yes. So they can actually go straight to our website, which is www.perk-group.com. And it's right there on the homepage. I mean, really, honestly, this is one of those events you don't want to miss. We actually have Pastor Rob McCoy that's going to be there, too. He will be giving the prayer. But Tulsi is our main speaker, and she's so incredible. So she's just, people do not want to miss this.
Right.
This is going to be a really,
sounds
really
like
good
an
one.
Awesome event. Where is it going to be held?
It's going to be held at the California Club. So just in downtown Los Angeles, beautiful venue, really beautiful venue. Okay. I'll be speaking as well. Mm-hmm. And it's just going to be such a great event. And, one thing I love about Tulsi on this wokeism issue is she said something that really resonated with me about women and women's rights. And she talked about how this woke ideology is really erasing women. Like, just if you think about it, our young girls, our girls, our women, it just fully erases us out of the equation. Our identity no longer matters. We're no longer women. We're birthing humans. And I just think that these are the issues of our time and our day that we have got to do everything we can to stand up, stand together,
mm-hmm.
Create coalitions. I love Dr. Barkey. We work with him. Do you remember Dr. Barkey when we did an interview with you, before everybody else knew you?
It's a long time ago.
It was like 2020, I think.
I think so.
Yeah. We had one of the first interviews with Dr. Barkey.
Oh, boy.
Well, but way back when.
There's been so many, Dr. Shannon Croner. I mean, there's just so many people
great.
Out there because we've been on this issue since the very beginning, since 277, because we've been on this our fourth year. And so we just keep at it, and people are starting to come around that were so pro pharmaceutical companies, all of the advances, and all of a sudden I'm looking back and it's like, well, wait a minute, I know my friend Dennis Prager is the same thing, on the radio he said, his son got vaccinated for his job, and now I hear him saying, that he was really, really upset. He should have paid for his son's work rather than allow him to be vaccinated.
Yeah.
Wow.
That there was that guilt of a parent. And since so many now that so many have died and gotten sick, all of the heart diseases and stuff like that, that it's like, there was a test period. Unfortunately, we were the guinea pigs.
Right, because it was experimental.
Yeah.
It was under an EUA, which is it was authorized as an experimental treatment. And that was the precursor. It didn't pass the animal trials, right? And the thing I think people don't even realize is for like decades, mRNA technology, vaccines that they had been trying to use mRNA technology with, it didn't even work. It didn't work.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And
they
didn't have the funding for it because it was so bad and had so many harmful side effects. They were on the brink of bankruptcy, $1.5 billion.
First time in human history that we've asked the human protein manufacturing system to create a non-human protein with messenger RNA technology. What could possibly go wrong?
Yeah.
Right. I mean, I know so many people that regret it. And I know people who have been harmed. I know people who have died. And I'm just grateful that my son didn't vaccinate my grandchildren and they didn't get vaccinated. We didn't get vaccinated, but it's very sad, really, and I think I'm hoping that this wakes a lot of people up to really think you cannot, just because it's our government, you can't think that everybody's going to have their best interest for you. And sometimes,
especially if it's coming from the government.
You think you can trust
Sacramento.
Sacramento.
Where is Dr. Pan still there?
Or Thank goodness he termed out.
Did he go to work for Pfizer?
Well, he could have, right?
Yeah.
I think with the just kind of this period of time, I think people are in a space of complacency right now, to be honest with you. And I think that they have to be very careful because what just happened with COVID, the lockdown, all of this, we may be in the eye of the storm right now, where it's just a little bit quieter. Mandates are in this lull, but by all means, people need to be wide awake, be ready, you know, be ready to stand up together and fight, because tyranny, you know, they're trying to censor us.
It's
free
relentless.
Speech, all these other issues, freedom of religion. That means tyranny is at our door.
Yes.
You know?
I remember the first restaurant I went to, and this is before it was mandated, they wanted to see a vaccine card.
Right, which is a vaccine passport.
Wait a minute.
It's crazy.
Wait a minute. This sounds kind of eerie, like 1933. Mm-hmm. You know, so Dr. Barkey, your book once again coming out?
Unavoidably Unsafe, Childhood Vaccine Revisited.
All right. And Amy, a PERC website?
PERC website is www.perkperk-group.com, and come to the Tulsi event. That's going to be such a great
event. So they need to go to the website and get the tickets while they still can.
While they still can.
And PERC always has great events. I've been to two of them, and they're fantastic.
And good food, too.
Yes. Oh, they're fantastic.
All right. You know, and that's it. And we want to thank our friend from Lincoln Heights, Stephen Serena Lampson, you know, for all that work. Marianne, there goes an hour.
It goes by so fast when you're having fun.
Yep.
Thanks for having us. This was fun.
Thank you, everyone. Ryan. Benito, and we'll be back next week. This is David Hernandez from Los Angeles Hispanic Republican Club Show. Be sure and go to our website.
Good night.
Goodbye.